Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Lydia, and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Please welcome our panel. We have Donald S. and Glenn M. Thank them for being here tonight. For their introductions when they share. I'm going to read the first paragraph on page 76, and then the panel will share a few minutes on each of the readings. Page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol.
I'll go first. I'm an alcoholic. Name is Glenn Mifflin. My sobriety date is January 16th, 1995, and I have a home group, Big Book in Ghent, which meets on on Tuesdays at 5:30 over on Olney at Stockley Gardens. So if you guys want to come and study the book with us, we'd be glad to have you. The one thing that that really strikes me out of this particular reading is that last sentence, and I have to constantly remind myself that when I started doing this with the sponsor, I did agree to go to any lengths. I was asked that question, and I answered that question in the affirmative. So when I come across something that tends to want to make me balk, which is facing somebody else or making that list to face somebody else, I have to remember this particular part of it. When it talks about faith, for me, I've come to understand that faith is something that I never really understood that I had any faith, but I did start developing the faith through, you know, going through the steps one by one, and doing what it said to do. But this is actually the first opportunity that I'm going to get a chance to really put that into action. And when it says that, you know, faith without works is dead, you know, having faith is one thing, but actually practicing the faith that I have is the real measure of what I've done in the past with this program. So I have to really reach back and draw on that contact that I've had with this higher power that I've started to develop, and realize that nothing that's going to come from this is going to harm me. You know, that the fear that I'm feeling will pass if I only go ahead and follow through with what I need to do with this. So I'm protected, like it says. I don't have any reason to have any fear. So if I just go ahead and follow through with this, do what it says, then everything's going to come out the way it's supposed to be. And I don't have to have a whole lot of input into that outcome, which outcomes were a big part of my life. I always dealt in outcomes. You know, and today I'm supposed to be dealing in actions and leaving the outcomes up to my higher power. So that's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Glenn. Donald Smith, alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. My home group is the West Kent Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet Wednesday night. We have a book study and a discussion meeting. So come join us if you'd like. When I first did this step, I did my inventory and did my fifth step and went home and did six and seven and then said, I'm not doing the rest for a while. I don't want to do this. You know, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, you know, I've committed crimes. You know, some were actual crimes, some were crimes in my mind. But I offended people. I've done some things. And so I've talked to my lawyer, who's my sponsor, when I did my fifth step. And I talked to the judge when I did six and seven, which was God. And that's all I need to do. I don't need to talk to the victims. I'm done with this, you know. And I sat on this for a long time. I did not want to have to go and talk to people or make financial amends or do any of this other stuff. I think this was the only step that I stopped and balked at for any length of time. And it ended up being about 4 or 5 months. And I was told at a meeting that really no longer exists, remember that meeting at the Oakdale Church over on Little Creek Road? It was a huge meeting. It was a ton of people there. And this guy just jumped my case on one night. Bob Hickey. And he just gave me more grief. And I mean, I was appalled he could talk to me that way. You know, and, you know, one of the things I remember, I don't remember if he told me this or not, but, you know, people kind of forget. You ought to read Dr. Bob's story. Dr. Bob got drunk because he didn't want to have to do his ninth step. He didn't want to have to go out and face the people that he had possibly harmed while he was practicing medicine drunk. And, you know, that's a big deal. I understand that. I was nowhere near. I was practicing something. It wasn't medicine. <You know? laughs> And so I didn't want to have to do this. But, you know, if in my experience, because I didn't do it, I got more tense. I got things were not working out, you know. I had stuff. So, you know, I went and did this, and the thing that gets me is that it says here that, you know, I said, I don't have a list. I haven't written it out. And, you know, my sponsor said, no. You have a list. It's in your fourth step. And those are the people that you're going to have to go talk to. So some people, when you do this, with their sponsor, some sponsors will take some people off the list. Some people will make you do all of them. My experience was I had to do them all, but I got a chance to rate them. I had people that I wouldn't do. No, I had people that I wouldn't mind doing at all, a piece of cake. I had people that I didn't really want to do, and I had a cold day in hell people. And as I did work through the list, the simpler to the harder, the cold day in hell people became easier to do. And that's because I got some experience with what was going on with this step. And, you know, it is, don't let anybody tell you that people in AA are not manipulative, because my sponsor also asked me, are you willing to go to any length to get sober? And I didn't quite know what he meant. I found that out. And I think, you know, here's the other thing is this, you know, it says here, in my efforts to live on self-will, I always had assumed that my life was supposed to be run on self-will. That's what I thought human beings did. That's what we were supposed to do. You know, I'm supposed to figure out what I'm supposed to do and go get it and not care how I got it, what happened in the middle of that. But what I found out was that for people like me, like an alcoholic that I am, that if I live that way, I am invariably going to go back and get drunk, particularly if I don't go back and make up and make right the things I've done. And so I had to pray a lot to get the willingness to go back and make up, make right the things I had done. And it said, I do this, you know, that was my out right there, it says here. If we haven't the will to do this, I ask till it comes. It took a long time for it to come. But finally, what came was the tension of not actually completing the steps. And I've also heard this, that people who don't finish their ninth step amends go get drunk. And I know at least one person that I know of that I sponsored who did not do that and ended up drinking himself to death. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. On that happy note.
Yeah. Please, we're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
The last thing that I'm going to ever go out and announce to the world is that I've turned religious. That is never, ever going to happen. It hasn't happened yet, and I can guarantee you it's probably not going to happen. So me approaching somebody, I didn't consider it an approach on a spiritual basis, even though that was the nature of what I was trying to do. I actually, it's really funny, I was real direct. I said, you know, this is what I need to do to stay sober. This is what I did, so on and so forth. So to go to somebody like that is not something that I would even consider to do. But the fact is that I've seen a lot of people that way. My experience is not that, but I've seen a lot of people that are willing to, you know, shout from the rooftops this thing. I'm not one of those. I'm real protective of my anonymity, and I'm real protective of my spiritual nature unless somebody broaches that issue with me. And so when it comes to doing some of this stuff, I'm not going to go at somebody, you know, like I'm a preacher on fire with hell and brimstone firing out of my eyes. You know, I'm just not going to do that. So I was real fortunate in that benefit, because I was so adverse to religion. And that's not to say I stayed that way. You know, I've gotten better over the years.
Not there yet,
but I've gotten better. But I have developed that spiritual nature in my life as time has gone on, through a lot of practice and a lot of experiences in doing it wrong. You know, doing stuff wrong, having to go back, retract, make it right, and then realize that all this stuff that I'm doing in making things right and straightening things out are being, the courage to do that is being provided for me. That's not something that I would do. I would not volunteer for that. But in order to live a sober life today, that's what I have to do. I can't sit here for very long on these things that I do wrong today. Although I did sit on one just recently for about 2.5 years. So, you know.
Although. There's always a but somewhere.
Well, it's like anything else with us alcoholics. You know, there's always that one thing that, you know, will disprove what I'm talking about. But generally, my sense is to get this stuff straightened out as quick as I can, because I don't enjoy the turmoil it causes in my head today, and I don't have a solution to reach for immediately and pour it down my throat. I have to go and face people and straighten this stuff out. So I can't just let it set today. I have to go at it with the knowledge that I need to straighten it out as quick as possible. Otherwise, I'm going to start doing that slippage backwards. And that's not something that I really, really want to do today. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks. I agree with you, Glenn. When I first did this, you know, I had to look up the word diffident. You all know what diffident means? I do. I looked it up. It says distrustful. It says hesitant to act, hesitant in acting or speaking through a lack of self-confidence. So I'm diffident if I want to go speak to my business acquaintances and friends. I was rather fortunate when I got to this part, I used to think anyway, because most of the people that I harmed were living in St. Louis and Tampa. And I was broker than broke, and I couldn't, there's no way I could get down there and make amends to them. And I had family around here, and most of my friends had moved away because I grew up around here. And so people I knew had moved away. But there were still lots of people that I needed to make amends to. But when I looked over the list, I did feel diffident. I didn't feel really confident that I knew what I was going to do with them and what I should say to them. But, you know, sitting down with a sponsor and going through this process with them, I came to find out some of the things I needed to say. And I prayed a lot, too, because, like I said, I didn't really want to have to go talk to these people. And I'm like Glenn too. I live a spiritual life, but I'm not religious, and I'm not about to go to somebody and tell them that I've found religion or God or something, and I'm here to make myself right. You know, my job is to do something else other than that. And one of them is to make sure that I can clear away all the wreckage of my past that I can get to, and make those amends so that I don't have to walk around with my, you know, not being able to look people in the eye. And my main thing now is to try to get that side of the street figured out and fixed. And I love this line it says in here, that we may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. And more interested in demonstration of goodwill than in my talk of the spiritual discoveries. I always like to talk about what I discovered, but I don't like to have to live what I discovered, you know? I think that somehow, as long as I think I know it, I don't have to actually do it. You know? It always sounds good, you know, but I was taught long, long time ago that my job, that what I had to do was I had to walk the walk and talk. If I was going to talk the talk, I had to walk the walk. And that people were, you know, would actually be watching what I did. You know, I know you come to AA and they say, don't be judgmental, but that's bull. Everybody in this place is, you know. I mean, come on. I want to know who's sober and who's not. I want to know who's saying one thing and doing another. Because I don't want to hang around people that are hypocrites. I don't want to hang around people who don't know what they're talking about. So I really do. I watch what people do. I don't really listen to what they say as much. I watch what they do and how they act. And a demonstration of goodwill is a much better way to live. It's not just because it is a way to live that works on all circumstances. And when I first get here, I don't know how to do that. So I have a lot of fear about what I'm going to do. I have a lot lack of self-confidence about how to do it. But as time goes on, as Glenn was saying, I learn how to do it. And as I learn, I also learn the benefits of doing it. The benefits are unbelievable, which we'll get to at some other point because we're going to do the whole thing. But just let me say this, and that is that you know, for me, you know, the real juice of the spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous come to me in the ninth step, as it says in the book. And that's because I'm actually doing what I say I'm doing. And the main thing is that I'm not living in fear. I think for me, I don't know about anybody else, but for me, fear drove my life. And when it came to doing this step, it drove my resistance to not wanting to do it. And that was because I was relying on myself and not on a power greater than myself. Not understanding that thing that I was claiming to have faith in, I was not really having faith in. I was mouthing it, but I wasn't doing it. And so I had to actually practice that in my life, and learning how to do that was just incredible. And then continuing to do it has been even more remarkable. I'm just, you know, but I won't say any more. But thank you.
Thank you. On page 77, we don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question, though, how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
Oh, yeah. This idea of sharing my spiritual belief and my spiritual life with somebody is not something I do readily, but I have had chances to do that with people I work with and people that I've encountered throughout my sobriety, and it's an evolving thing, just like everybody else's life is an evolving thing. The spiritual life is the same thing. But the one thing I do tell everybody that I share this with is that you know, I'm not a religious guy and I'm not a churchgoer, but I do have a faith in a power greater than me. And I'm not ashamed of that. That's what I believe in, and that's what gets me through life on a daily basis. And a lot of people don't know how to take that, and it's just the way it is, and that's fine. That's fine with me. Today, you know, used to, I'd have to, you know, delve into the explanation a little bit more, but that's as far as I go most of the time. So, I've developed an understanding of me and what spiritual nature I have, and that's all I have to be okay. I mean, I'm okay with it today, and that's as far as I have to go. As far as approaching somebody that I hate, which was everybody on that list, until I got a better understanding with my sponsor, I really didn't like, and it's funny that it was this way. There was one person on my list that I had an extreme hatred for, and I refused to go talk to this person. But I got hounded enough about it so that I just wanted it, you know, the chatter to stop. So, you know, I sucked it up and I went and talked to this individual and explained, you know, that I, you know, my behavior and what I had done and what it was that I need to, you know, ask them what it was that I needed to do. And they were gracious because of my approach. And I'd worked that approach out with my sponsor in advance. And it's amazing that I can do that today because I'm not a good actor, really. I'm really not. People can see it all over my face if I don't like you. It's not real hard. I mean, it's not real hard to figure out. But I've learned to be gracious myself. And I've learned that I don't have hatred anymore. I may have some dislike for somebody, but I've learned to understand that people are where they are and they need to be where they are. And I have no right to have a problem with that in the first place. So if I remember that and I go to these people with that particular thought in mind, and also something that Donald's really been, you know, it's great that you get to spend time with the guy for a long time going over the book. Because we go out to the prison every Saturday and we go over this and over this and over this. And the one thing that he's really been great about is that my mission is to relieve somebody else's problem in life. That's what I'm going to do is to help somebody else get over this thing that I have caused. And if I remember that, you know, it changes the whole dynamic. And I no longer have that feeling of hate. You know, I have a feeling of helpfulness and service that was not in me to begin with, but has come to be a part of me since I got sober. And I remember that, and I go to these people and talk to them and, you know, do what I need to do to get this thing straightened out, then, you know, I'm not going to have that hard time with hatred any longer. And it has turned around. It really has. And I don't have, well, I have a couple people I can do without, but again, the exception to the rule. But for the most part, you know, I can let people alone. I don't have, you know, I can leave them alone just to be who they are. And that's different today than I've ever been. Thanks.
I'll go back up to the paragraph before that because I wanted to say something and I forgot to. It says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And I think that this step, 8 and 9, what more, well, both of them together, when looked at together, they are the culmination of everything I've been doing up to this point. They have everything that I've been trying to do in my life. One thing, when I write resentment, I write my resentment inventory. What am I doing? I'm talking about all these people that I hate, you know, that I have a problem with. I may not even hate them. I just have a problem with them. Something they did, you know. And so as I do that process, I come to find out that it's not them. It's not what they did. And it's really how I feel about what they did. And then I can look at, you know, where am I at fault on this? What's my responsibility about these three items in my life? And when I find out what my defects of character are, they're generated by all this craziness I got in my head. Then I know. I mean, I really understood that finally, after doing step 4 and 5, that I was the problem in most of these relationships, or if not all of the relationships. And even if there was one or two that I had a legitimate reason to be angry with somebody, how I dealt with that anger throughout my life was really more important than anything else, because that was clearly what I wasn't doing. I clearly was disassociating myself from the people around me and using those things as excuses to do things to other people. So I get rid of all this stuff, and I'm trying to fit myself to be a maximum service to God and the people around me. There's a lot more, we'll talk about it at later date, but I really do, you know, I want to emphasize, you know, that doing this teaches me to do one thing that I have a really hard time doing, and that is making sure that I can control the outcome of the situation. I want to go and talk to this guy that I hate, and I want him to like me. I want him to absolve me. I want him to do something, you know. And what this book says is that I don't even have to get a thank you. I don't have to get let's set the appointment. All I have to do to make this situation right is to put the effort and pick up the phone and make the appointment or try to make the appointment. And if they say no, that's on them. You know, that's on them. And so what I'm doing is that, you know, I'm getting God's forgiveness, and I'm going to go out and ask and tell this person that I forgive them by telling them what my side of the street was when I was doing what I was doing. That's what I'm doing. And so that gives them the opportunity to either say yes or no, but I don't care what that is. I'm making the attempt. And it says, why is it more beneficial for us to go to an enemy rather than a friend? I mean, you all have had friends on your resentment list, I'm sure, right? You had a friend that you were mad at. They were still your friend, but you harbored that in the back of your head. So that's an easy one to do. So why is it more important to go to see an enemy? Glenn?
Yeah.
You know, well, ask yourself that question. If you don't know, we'll talk about it next week. You know, the most important thing for me is to trust the process and have faith that what I'm doing is what I should be doing. And what they do is what they do. I never could get that through my thick skull, but I want them. I have this cause and effect in my head. I do this, they do that. I do this, they do that. And I get to get away from that. All I need to do is focus on what I'm supposed to be doing and then let God take care of the results. And in a way, all I'm doing is offering up a scenario so that they then can take responsibility for their own actions and whether or not they are going to forgive and forget. And that's on them. But at least the opportunity is there. I was sitting here trying to remember if there was anybody that I really hated when I did my inventory that I had to go talk to. And the only person was my ex-wife. I just couldn't stand her. It was horrible how bad. I did her the last. I'll talk about it a little later because we're running out of time, but I'll get to it. It was a wonderful experience. I'll say that.
Thank you, Donald. In the continue on page 77, under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do, his faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam.
You know, I almost wish that this second part was never written, because that right there deals with outcomes, you know, and it gives me the false impression that, you know, my outcomes are going to be okay because I only read the good part. I don't read the part that might be rarely, you know, do things come unsatisfactory, but sometimes they'll throw you out. I never read that. you know, I read this, you know, this stuff's going to happen good 9 times out of 10, which turned into 10 times out of 10. You know, I don't need to be in the outcomes in any situation. And it's something I harp on out at the prison. You know, these guys are constantly in outcomes, and I keep telling them, you know, that stuff's none of my business. It's none of your business. We got to stay out of that. But the idea of criticizing, I had to work real hard in my fourth step to get away from the criticizing, because in the fourth column, I was real good about starting the explanation of what my part of it was with he, she, they, that kind of stuff. The hidden blame that I've tried to push back on them so that I still looked okay and was blameless. So I really worked hard on that. And so when it came time to come up with a way of approaching people, I generally was okay, except that one I just told you about. I had a real difficult time with that one. I had to go over it and over it and over it until I finally, you know, gave up that hard line. That, you know, there, a lot of times I have a hard line on one that I am not giving up on. I refuse to give this spot up, and I'm going to go until whatever. But eventually, I got worn down, and I realized that if I was going to make progress, I had to give up that hard line, and I had to approach this individual in an open and giving manner. There was no other way I was going to have any success on my part, not with her or whatever, but on my part. With me, if I didn't stop having this hard line. And today I'm still working on that. You know, it's another issue that it's another chance to grow that I'm working on now, to break up that hard line that I've had in my life, throughout my life. So it's real important, and I remembered it in every— it's really great. I've remembered it in everything that I've done, that I stick to what I did. I stick to what I did, and I don't venture over that line with what they did, how anything happened with them. I stay on my side of it and leave it at that. And good, bad, or indifferent, that's the way it worked out best. So thanks.
Thank you. Let me give you a little quick little background. I had left Norfolk when I was in, I don't know, 29 years old, and didn't come back until I was 39. So everybody that I knew when I was drinking from here until 29 had all gone away except my brother. I don't know where they went. So I had some anger at some of these people, but I never could run into them. I didn't know who didn't know how to find them. Back in those days, they didn't have the internet. It sounds like a long time ago, but the internet wasn't is kind of a recent thing. So my main antagonism was against my wife, my ex-wife, and man, did I hate that woman. I mean, I thought that she did all these things to make me go so that I would abandon my daughter, and I didn't give her, and therefore I didn't give him any money. I didn't do nothing. I didn't call on the phone to wish my daughter happy birthday. I mean, it was all her fault. And so I just kind of nursed that excuse for all this time. So when I get sober, I got to go talk to her. And I don't really want to do that. Of course, but I was driven to do it by the lash of alcoholism. Either do that or get sober or go get drunk. And so I did. I scheduled an appointment, and we met. When we first met each other way back in the beginning, it was in a place called Dan's Hideaway, which is now Kelly's. Kelly's on Collie Avenue. And so I met her at Cali's for lunch. It was her suggestion. It was on a Sunday afternoon, and I had scheduled in my mind a 1 hour. Let me buy you lunch. Here's what I'm going to say. And then she's going to tell me how much money I owe her. And, you know, and why didn't you do this? And why didn't you do that? And, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, so, but I said, I'll give her an hour, hour and a half. That's what I'm going to do. So I go, and we have lunch, and we start talking at 1 o'clock, 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we don't get done till like 5 or 6 that night. She became so smart. I was stunned at how perceptive she was, how sensitive she was, and how much pain she had been in while I was doing what I was doing. And she ultimately got remarried and married a Norfolk fireman, and they lived a good life, and they raised my daughter really well. And I had nothing to do with it. And, you know, and she didn't want any money from me. She didn't want nothing. We just talked. It was the most unbelievable experience I've ever had in my life. You know, and I thought I had a whole lot of experiences in my life. But that just blew my mind. But I went there with this thing in my mind, don't criticize her, you know, because in my mind I knew she was a bitch. You know, she'd tell me what time to come home. You got to come home at 3 o'clock in the morning. No, I don't. You know, but she was none of those things. She was wonderful. And so, you know, I just came to realize that almost every one of the boogeymen I had in my head were all non-existents. Because every time I went to talk to somebody, it was always, I got 10 out of 10. I mean, I had nobody that actually threw me out of their office. And then when I started trying to contact people from out of the state that I really was mad at, they all had died. And I went, thank you, God. I hate to say it sounds rude, but that's what I did. And I'm like, I said, all right then, you know? Yeah, I mean, but I didn't check the box and I moved on. But let me just say this, you know? This is going to be, well, I'll tell you this quick. Right after I did my seven-step prayer, I was living with this woman, and I finished doing it, and I walked out, and I was sitting there. It was about maybe an hour later, I got a phone call, and it was an old girlfriend of mine in St. Louis, Missouri, and we talked. I never gave her my phone number. She had called my parents, gotten the number. She called me, and I got a chance to do my amends. I never saw her again. I never talked to her again, and I did that for about an hour. I hung up the phone. 45 minutes later, there's another phone call from another old girlfriend in Springfield, Missouri. And she, I don't know how she found my number, but she didn't call my parents. She just had my number. And I did my amends with her. I never saw her again. I never talked to her again. I mean, that's God working in my life. Because I'm not going to, you know, I wouldn't have enough money today, probably. Well, probably today I would. But you know, for, you know, almost 10, 15 years, I could not get back to Missouri because of my financial situation. Because we're going to talk about money in a little bit, and I'm going to tell you something. That's another thing altogether. So what I'm saying is, I'm saying this because, you know, I think God set up for me the method and the means by which I was able to make amends with people. And it was an amazing, and still is an amazing process. And when I made amends with my ex-wife, I walked out of that restaurant, and I was like, man. And, you know, it was at that time that I started just things that I had not experienced before. I became aware of things that were wonderful and satisfying, and it was just like I got all this energy out of nowhere. And I think part of it was because she had an opportunity to clear the air on her side of the street. She told me all this stuff that she had never been able to tell me, and she became free too. That to me was remarkable. And I accepted the things that I did, and I kept my mouth shut about any other opinions. And my honest opinion is that the reality was that I was totally wrong in that relationship. I mean, she would go crazy, but I'd made her go crazy. I said things and did things that would drive any person crazy. Yeah, all she wanted was a family, and I was totally not there. And I drove her away. So I'm just saying that if doing this causes all of this really magical stuff to happen that has nothing to do with what I'm doing right in front of me, but it has everything to do with what I'm doing in front of me. Because the book says a spiritual life is not a theory. I have to live it. And when I live it, this stuff starts happening. And it was amazing to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to continue on page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them what we are trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we're sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them.
I was one of those drunks that got that backwards. I didn't know anything when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was, for some reason, I was able to stay out of that mess until I was sober and about 10 years into sobriety, and then I got the opportunity to go through the all the stuff with the creditors and paying all that money back and everything. But fortunately, I had behind me that those lessons that they talk about in this this little reading, you know, that I don't let fear affect me. I go ahead and I face these people, tell them what's up, and I agree to the terms that they set. And then I follow through with those terms, and that's what I did. And everything got straightened out. It's not something I'm proud of. You know, here I am in sobriety, supposed to be this spiritual giant, and I'm getting myself deeper and deeper in debt, you know, and here I go. You know, I got to fess up and let people know that, you know, I'm not such a smart guy after all. You know, I made some pretty serious mistakes. I admitted them, I straightened them out, and hope to goodness I don't have to do that again, because I'm just a little bit too old to be doing that again. But honestly, you know, there's really nothing in this life that's worth running away from anymore. I used to think that there were, but there's nothing. I very much need to face it. Otherwise, I am going to drink. I'm absolutely positive of that. So I do what I have to do, and I'm not real happy about it most of the time, but I do it, and I get happy. You know, that's just one of those benefits of following through. Eventually, I'm going to get happy about it. So, thanks.
You know, it says most alcoholics owe money. What little money I owed, I was a cash and carry kind of guy. I didn't have a credit card. I didn't own a car. The jobs I had, I worked for an environmental group. And I was living in Florida. I mean, living in Missouri, and worked for a consumer group in Florida, and they provided me with transportation. When I wrecked their cars several times, you know, I tried. Part of that making up for that was on the amends list, financial amends. I never wrecked a car in Missouri, but I did get evicted from my apartment and had all of that stuff. That's been a long thing. So what I like about this is that it just tells me, you know, you got to make amends. You got to go back and fix all this stuff. You got to pay back the people their money, you know. And there's a thing about money and spirituality, and I think this is another place where money and spirituality come together. You know, people work hard. They put a lot of their effort and a lot of their time and a lot of their energy, a lot of their attention, a lot of their lives goes into making money. Then I steal it from them one way or the other. And they deserve to have that repaid with interest if they desire. And it gives me an opportunity to start learning how to live like a responsible individual. And I did all of that stuff because my eventual thing is that I wanted to buy a house, and I had to clean all that stuff up if I was going to do that. So I had to go back and find the woman that owned that apartment I got evicted from and pay her back. I had to pay Laclede Gas Company. I had to pay the electric company. I had, you know, all those people that I owed money to. Now, the environmental group had, well, the one down in Florida had disappeared, so I couldn't find them and pay them back for their cars. But I mean, I did the best I could. And the thing, and again, the thing is this, you know, and that this goes back to what happened with my wife, and goes back to the other thing, my ex-wife rather, and the other thing, and that is that I have to not worry about what the outcome of this is going to be. I had a lot of money I had to pay the woman I had to, you know, that owned the apartment, and because it was 3 months' rent, it was garnishment. I mean, not garnishment. It was interest. It was late fees. This, you know, they pile up on you, you know. Plus, she wanted the entire lease paid out, so I had to make arrangements to pay that money back, even though I had a minimum wage job working at Tracks Records and Tapes, you know, because I was on a roll, you know. But I had to do all that stuff, and I did it because that's what I'm supposed to do. And it says we have to lose our fear of creditors. So this is telling me once again that fear is my main problem, and I have got to lose fear of the people I hate. I got to lose fear of my creditors. I got to lose fear of not doing the right thing. I got to just lose my fear and do what the right thing is, just do the next thing right and keep on moving my life forward. But I got to do that with God's help because I can't do it by myself. I have no clue how to do that by myself. And, you know, I'll just say this. I wasn't afraid to drink again, but I knew that I would go crazy, and that would make me drink. I didn't want to go crazy. I knew that what goes on in my head is bad enough that I'd have to go have a drink. That's what I thought about when I was thinking about this. Because if I don't do this, I'm going to go back to that crazy-ass thinking. And that stuff was just, you know, I had already lived through that. I didn't want to do it again. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to conclude on page 79. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we may be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
The fact that we started out with this reminder that I was willing to go to any length over victory over alcohol, it's turned into reminding myself that I've decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience. That's the evolution that I've gone through. At this point, you know, I'm looking for that spiritual experience. And I do ask for the strength and direction because I don't have it within me. I know that I don't have it within me. And I also ask for the courage to do what is the next thing up. You know, I have to have that courage also to do it. Not just the strength, but the courage to get my feet moving where I need to go. And I'm not bashful about that. I know that's not my making. I don't do that, not on my own. And I'm real proud of the fact that I do have a higher power that helps me today, and I'm really thankful for that too. Thanks.
Thank you. I did not look up the word reparation. I forgot to do that. I was going to, but I'll do it next week. But, you know, when I was told I had to do reparations, I had to find out what it was I could do to make it right, I was like, I don't want to do that. Let me tell you what I will do to make it right. And it says, these reparations take innumerable forms. And these are the general principles. I mean, they just lay it out for you, too, what we just talked about, the general principles of how to do it. And it is, it, you know... It is absolutely true that at any given time of the day, you know, because when I get up in the morning, I remind myself and I remind God or tell God that I know that I'm an alcoholic. I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over my own life. You know, I'm not powerless. You know, this thing they say about, you know, people, places, and things. You know, I have a lot of power over people, places, and things. If I didn't, I wouldn't have to be doing this mess. You know, I have screwed up a lot of people's lives. That's power. You know, but this gives me the power to go back and fix that kind of stuff and make it right. And so I don't have, what I don't have power over is myself. I can't keep myself from being an asshole sometimes. I can't keep myself from hurting you sometimes. I can't keep myself from doing, sometimes a lie will pop out of my mouth. I wouldn't even think about it. Boom, it goes. You know, and so what do I do? Do I take it back? Do I let you know I just lied? What do I do? Well, I work the steps. I figure out, you know, I pause and agitate or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action and do them it comes. All right? But I don't get that way just by kind of sitting around on my butt not doing anything. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, I got to get direction. I got to ask for strength. I got to ask for direction. I have a hard time with the right, you know, to do the right thing. I always kind of, my thing is to look at it like I'm going to do the next thing right. You know, I know how to open up this. I know how to do that. It's a very practical thing. I clearly don't know what's right and wrong. I mean, I generally, morally, I do. But what's right for Evan may not be right for me. Or I don't know. I just don't know. You know. So I try not to get into that realm. What I try to do is do the next thing right, and that's what I ask God to help me with every day. And I just want to say one quick thing. There was a gentleman that was facing jail. And was willing to do something that he probably shouldn't have done, or maybe he should have done. Who knows, right? Who knows the right thing in these situations? But he was willing to, and he did go to jail for something he did when he was doing his amends. And you know that takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of a desire not to get drunk again. I mean that's a big deal to do. And I wonder, I had a situation I'll tell you about next week maybe, where it was not nearly as bad, but I wish and hope that sometimes that I have that same kind of desire to stay sober, because you know that's a desire that is really big. And it says here we must not shrink from anything. And so ask yourself, what would you not do? If you had to make amends, what would you not do? And that's the thing you should do. Thank you.
Oh, thank you to our panel. Thank you very much. The submission states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and responsibility for groups and members to ensure that they are not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA announcements?
Alfred, alcoholic. I know the Big Book Topic Group is having their Halloween dance and get-together Saturday night. This Saturday night, October the 24th, at Hampton Presbyterian Church, the corner of Victoria and Armistead, and there'll be dance, food, costume contests, all sorts of fun stuff. So 8 o'clock in Hampton.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Alfred. Thank you. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of our home group members. Home group members, raise your hands. Newcomers, the most important person in the room, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you.
Okay.
Christy,
welcome.
Christy, welcome.
Hey, Jen, welcome.
Hey, Tennessee, welcome. Hey, welcome. Glad you're here.
All the way in the back.
Hey, Chris, welcome.
Chris, welcome.
Hey, Chris. Welcome.
Hello.
Angeles.
Okay. There's a literature available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you're interested in that. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you to not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, Debbie and I will be here after the meeting. Please feel free to ask us any questions. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, I'd like to thank our chairs tonight for a wonderful meeting. To all who participated in our coffee makers, after we clean up, all are invited to and encouraged to continue the conversation on step discussed tonight on step 8 at the meeting after the meeting, which will be at
Plaza del Sol
on 21st Street, just 2 blocks up. Please join us. And I need someone to volunteer to read the last 2 paragraphs in page 164.
Yes. My name is Ava. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ava.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Amen. Thank you. I'd like to close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.
Oh, yeah.
What did I think? What do you think? There's like a 50 people?
I don't know. Man, we had to stretch out.
Jay, do you want to lead the Lord's Prayer?